So we reached all the way to Unmada, which could loosely be translated as insanity. But simple thing is, Unmada means not being able to be coherent. You know? Actually, it begins from there. You know, Unmada. That is 1, 2, 3, 4. Fourth one, Unmada. Being incoherent when we are not clear about ourselves. No. When we are not coherent in terms of our speech, our action, our thought, our behavior, our interaction with each other. No. When the condition of our mind, condition of our thought, condition of our speech, condition of our action, that takes away people's trust in us. Actually, that is the beginning point of our insanity. Everything else evolves from there. Unfortunately, due to lack of a clear understanding of such a subtle level of reality, we do not realize that that is the beginning point of our downfall. That is when our body, breath, mind, senses begin to fall apart from each other. That is when a very, very unique process has been inaugurated in our body even. That is when our action, our lungs, our kidneys, our liver, our GI tract, our skin, they do not function coherently anymore. It's so subtle. Once you realize that your body is not just a physical machine, but rather it's a living consciousness, but rather it is will of the divine in flesh, then you realize that how beautiful is this body and how beautiful is the connection between the body and the mind. Then comes Shakini. Amazing concept. In human body, there are 9 chakras, 7 very popular. Similarly, each chakra is assigned a Shakti. Lakini, Rakini, Shakini, Dakini, Hakini, and so on. And again, just as I was referring to you last night, that there came a very dark phase in Indian history when people forgot even what these words meant. So today, if you word a, if you say, oh, watch out, she is just a Dakini. Mean she is just a bitch, she will cut you into pieces and devour you uncooked, raw. She will kill you, she will turn into ball meat, meatball. And you know, I am just chew, Dakini. No, there is a whole thing behind it. It's an amazing thing. There is a beautiful scripture called Rudra Yamala. Beautiful scripture that talks about all these different Shakti's powers. So that is what this Shakti's are. So now here is Shakini. Rupa Pari. Parivrityartham pasu sonit adi akarshani Shakini. Pasu. Pasu. Pasu means animal. Okay. And who is animal? One who is tied to a rope, one who is in bondage, one who is bound, one who is constantly accompanied by limitations. So you have domesticated animals, and domestication means they are confined to your ranch. If you don't have a ranch, then they are confined to your barn. Sometimes there are small farmers and cattle raisers, cattle herders. They don't have whole barn. They have just a couple of cattle, and they tie the cattle with rope so that this animal is allowed to be only in this much area and not disturb the place over there. But one thing is sure, that animals have a limited space, limited choices, limited range of mobility. That's what makes them animals. Okay. Whether you tie them to a rope, or even if you leave them completely wild, they have very unique range of mobility. Their consciousness does not permit them to explore the new possibilities in life. A rat's range cannot be more than few hundred meters, just hardly 100 meters, hardly few hundred feet. It is in that much range they established their kingdom. That's where their superiority, inferiority, their survival issues, that's where they are born, that's where they build their castles, that's where they dominate each other and procreate and die. So there is always, that's called limitation. Somehow not being able to see that there is a possibility of expanding one's capacity, and thereby there is possibility of attaining freedom from our limited range of mobility, thinking, speaking, and behaving, that's called being an animal. Okay. And yet, there is amazing phenomena in each of us. Whether we are rats, whether we are, very ordinary, nomadic person from Chad, or let's say Mongolia, or someone ultra modern, physicist conducting research on astrophysics, here at Harvard and MIT. No matter what we are, and regardless how big is how great are the limitations imposed on us, and or how much limitations have been removed, and yet there is one phenomena that is happening that is very natural, that despite our endless limitations imposed on us, there is another force that is always constantly working within us to remove those limitations and provide certain degree of freedom so that we can grow. There is a force that really struggles hard, helping us, enabling us to grow in most terrible situations and circumstances. That force is Shakini. What is here this definition given? Very beautiful definition. Rupa parivritti artham. You have certain form. Rupa means form. Parivritti means continuous churning, tumbling, reshaping, giving a new shape. Pasu solit adi akarshini. That energy keeps drawing, keeps attracting. The life-sustaining energy from the surrounding, from air, from water, from meat, from blood. Okay. From flesh, from bones. Continuous process of capturing, pulling, and transporting, the nurturance is going on. This continuous process. At every stage in our life, in every stage in our nature, there is a continuous process of recognizing, capturing, pulling, dragging, transporting the nurturance, the force of nurturance, or that matter that contains the matter in which the nourishment is contained. There is a continuous process to go out there, take it, transport it to the place where it is most, urgently needed. So this is going on, and by the virtue of this process, our rupa, our form, our shape is constant. Our form is constantly changing. From the day of our birth all the way to the day of our death, there is continuous change. And that change means change in shape, size, color, form, all this called change. Anything that distinguishes the existence of this moment from what existed in the previous moment or what will exist in the next moment, that's called change. It's continuously going on. And the force that enables that thing to happen is called Shakini. When this goddess is not happy, she is a terrible demoness. When she's happy and friendly, she's a goddess. Haven't you seen yourself? There are times when you are just like, literally, you are a living God. You are so generous, so kind, so loving, so giving, so selfless. And the level of your self-sacrifice is limitless. There are times same very sacred in you becomes so unsacred, so wild, and so beastly. That can create, terror. Here you have so much love. There are times when you read. Then Pitaja Devi Yoginya. Yogini. Yogini. What is Yogini here? Very amazing concept. Some of us, all the male figures sitting here are called yogis. All the female figures sitting here are called yoginis. But what is there that makes us yogi? What is that makes us become a yogi or makes us become yogini? It's the yogini makes us yogi. Yogini makes us yogini. Yogini, a force. What is that? Pitaja. Devyaha. The shining, divine, bright forces that reside at our pithas, shrines, sacred sites within us. See here, body itself is a living temple. Now let's take this an example. That here, although the body is very wonderful thing, but within this body, there are different places with different attributes, different quarters with different attributes and different functions. So, body is a great temple. In this body, there are many in this temple. There are many chambers. It's like a big house. Some places are storage space, back pantry. There are places within the temple where you can see plumbing. In some of the pipes in the plumbing, there is a clean drinking water flowing, and there is other one that is where grey water is flowing. There is other one where you have your, you know, toilet water flowing through the pipe. Not all the pipes are, in terms of quality, character and function, are exactly the same. No? Similarly, here in the body, there are different limbs and organs with different functions, qualities, character and characteristics. Some of them are called pitha. Pitha means the place where you sit, where you can be comfortable. That which holds you. This is a pitha. This stool is pitha. Place where you can put your clock, your pen, your marker, your glass of water, and time to time, comfortably, you can reach and pick up the marker and go and write. Then put it back. This has different function. But the place where I'm sitting, this is also pitha, but this is pitha, seat for me. Pitha means seat. So here on this particular pitha, on this seat, I sit. And on this seat sits my pen, my glass of water, and my paper. Okay. That's called pitha. So pitha devyah. Devis, the shining forces, bright forces, residing on the seats, sitting on the seats, are called yoginis. One who sits still in you is called a yogini. One who knows what is the right place and right time to sit where, the one in you knows what is the right place and the right time to sit where, is called a yogini. The force that charges a particular spot in your body to become a seat for particular function, particular entity, particular divinity, that is called yogini. It's yogini in you, that very, very specialized bright being in you, which charges a particular limb and organ of your body in such a manner that that particular limb and organ of your body becomes a suitable place for a particular type of energy, particular type of functions to take place. And it is that energy, that divine being, that bright being, that force of intelligence in you makes sure that your bottom of your, you know, at the bottom of your, at the base of your spine, there is a very nice flat seat so that you can sit comfortably and make sure that seat has enough cushion, seat is not tilted, it's not an uneven, and it is that energy, that bright being, that force of intelligence also makes sure that the spine sitting on the top of that seat, that is your own bottom, is held properly, or let's say your bottom is somehow healthy, strong, comfortable, so that your spine, the spine can sit properly and your bottom becomes a good seat for your spine. That force of intelligence in you is called yogini. A force that makes sure that Even in your sleep, when you are sleeping, if a mosquito bites you somewhere on your cheek, automatically your reflex is such that your hands come and do like this. While you are fully asleep, there is force of intelligence that sits there in three places. The place where the mosquito is biting, as well as in that particular part of the brain where command has to come from, and your own hand. That function is done. That's called yogini. All right. There are problems caused by the malfunctions of that yogini, ill behaviors of that yogini, or sleepiness of that yogini, that force. And so, example I'll give you. In the external world, same force is there in Banaras, Israel, Mount Kailas, Ayodhya, Saint Francis, and Assisi. Pitja Devyah. There is a presiding force of that particular shrine. There is presiding force. There is a seat in your colon. There is a seat in your, you know, second chakra. There is second chakra is a seat. Third chakra is a seat. First chakra is a seat right in your own body. And also, peet. There are four main peet in India. One in the Himalayas, Badrinath, Kedarnath. Another, East Coast, Jagannath Puri. South, Rameswaram. West, Dwarika. Four peet. Then there are many, many other peets. Also, there is a very, very big peat, Israel. Super big peat, Banaras. A wonderful peat, Ayodhya. Those peats, those sites, sacred sites. No? Many of those sacred sites and the energy of those sacred sites. Have become barbaric. Ayodhya is a living example. To a great degree, Banaras is a living example. Israel is definitely a living example. You know? But a spiritual seeker within you goes to same very Israel, Jerusalem. Somehow, the peace that is now somehow run by the barbaric yogini doesn't come forward to bother you, but rather in response to that spiritual seeker in you, there is a wonderful yogini, the presiding force of that particular site, that particular shrine, that particular, you know, spiritual site, comes forward and greets you. Despite the fact, Muslims, Christians, and Jews, all driven by their possessiveness, have their own agenda, and that agenda is being presented in such a, you know, what you call, unintelligent manner, that that particular way of presenting the agenda has led people to become barbaric. And yet, perhaps, and yet in response to the yogini, awakened yogini in you, the yogini of that place, despite all those undesirable conditions and circumstances, comes forward and opens its arm, greets you with open arms. That is, here there is a cure, there is a disease as well as cure. Both are there. The same very yogini is source of problems. Same very yogini is also holds the key to the cure. That is why amazing thing is, you read the books on Kundalini Yoga today, you find amazing description. Even, you know, in our casual language, casual course of conversation, people use very funny expressions. Oh boy, these days I'm really struggling with my second chakra issues. Each second chakra source of issue, or second chakra is source of great enlightenment. Which way do you look at it? But people said, better you do something, you are in big trouble, your second chakra, first chakra is wild. Yeah, if your first chakra is wild, you are in trouble. If your first chakra is, you know, stable, enlightened, healthy, calm, tranquil, you are also, you know, in great shape. In fact, you are in great shape is determined by the fact that how wonderful is your first chakra. It's the ugliness of your first chakra, it's the beastly behaviors of the first chakra creates problems, and it's, you know, heavenly behaviors of your first chakra makes your life become wonderful. So that is yogini. And this particular mantra, Mahamrityunjay mantra, is exactly for that. And now this is how I will come back, that this is how the practices are designed, exactly to target these problems. Bhagini means sister. Problems caused by the sisters. The disease your sisters give you, sickness your sisters give you, that's called Bhagini, you know, born, sister-born disease, sickness, headache. And cure to that lies in this particular, you know, practice. Well, fortunately, this word, Bhagini, has not been become part of regular language with bad connotation. Bhagini simply means sister. But what does Bhagini means? Here again, bad behaviors of Bhagini. When your sister becomes, you know, then you as a brother, whether you are man or woman, yogi or yogini, really doesn't matter. It's the language in which these scriptures talk. Just pay attention to that language. Bhagini. Bhagini means, Bhagini is Bhagini here. It comes from word Bhaga. No? Bhaga is amazing term. It refers to six qualities. Aishwaryasya samagrascha dharmasya yashasa sriya jnana vairagiyoshche yuva shadete bhag itirina. Aishwarya, ability to do what you wish to do. Your ability not to do what you do not wish to do. And ability to undo what has been already done. These three abilities together are called Isha. Isha means kartum, akartum, anyatha kartum, samartha, Isha. And that quality, ability to do what you wish to do, ability to undo what has already been done, an ability to refrain from doing which you do not wish to do. That capacity is called Bhaga. This 1/6 of the bhaga quality. Still there are 5 more. So that's called Aishwarya. The power, that energy that empowers you, the energy that charges you with the ability to do what you wish to do, ability to refrain from doing which you do not wish to do, and ability to undo what has already been done by you or even by others. That is called power of Isha, Bhaga, one of the six properties of the term Bhaga. Then Dharma, the ability to know what is right thing to do, what is right and what is not right, what is healthy, what is not healthy, what is virtuous and what is not virtuous, what is liberating and what is bondage-some. That's called Dharma. Another one of the 6 qualities of Bhaga. So these similarly dharmas, yasha, your inclination, your desire, your interest, and your natural tendency to be attracted toward doing something which makes you shine, which makes the world shine, that which allows you to leave a wonderful, beautiful, memorable legacy behind. That's called yasha. No. And 4th one is Sri. The ability to recognize and allow, ability to recognize that beauty in you, and ability to let that beauty continue growing till eternity. That's called Sri. That beauty, the prosperity, the beauty and the inner beauty, outer beauty. Inner prosperity, outer prosperity. That which makes you become beautiful and that which makes you become loved by all and also loved by yourself. That beauty and recognition of your own inner wealth which makes you love yourself and which makes others love you. No? That which takes away that entire tendency of self-abandonment, and that which takes away your habit of abandoning and discarding anybody else. That's called Sri, the source of prosperity and success in life. It is a subtle tendency to abandon and discard others. And it is a subtle tendency to isolate yourself from others that makes you look ugly. And that's what makes you fail in life. No? Embrace all and exclude none is the foundation for becoming a wonderful, beautiful, wealthy, prosperous person. And that ability is called Sri. That is one of another qualities of another quality that is lumped together in one word, Bhaga. Then 5th and 6th, Gyan and Vairagya, the knowledge and non-attachment. And I will not go into all that detail. 5th, knowledge. 6th, non-attachment, dispassion. Thus all these 6 together, Isha, quality of being Isha, that is Aishwarya, Dharma, Yasha, Sri, knowledge, Jnana, Vairagya, non-attachment. These 6 together is called Bhaga. And one who is endowed with Bhaga is called Bhagini in feminine gender. How and when, at what point in history, the word Bhagini came to refer to sister, I don't remember this. I have, somebody has to do a philological study of this particular word. No. But this is the actual meaning of Bhagini. in masculine gender, it's called Bhagwan, loosely translated as God. Thus, Bhagini means goddess. Let's put it that way. This is the definition of so-called God. God means another word for God. You know, God is Ishwara, also another word is Bhagwan. Bhagwan means one who is endowed with one who is endowed with Bhaga, and Bhaga means the six qualities, characteristics, and attributes together fully balanced. Such a person is called Bhagwan. Parallel to Bhagwan is Bhagavati. However, another term in the Sanskrit language is Bhagini. And in Vedic mythology, there is a god also. His name is Bhaga. The one who is embodiment of. And later on, as the mythology continued growing, then the Bhaga got subsumed, became part of Indra, the king of the gods. Okay. So, Bhagini, now. Here is a problem caused by the lack of derangement of one of these six attributes. You are not able to do which you wish to do, and you struggle and suffer. You are not able to refrain from what you do not wish to do, and you suffer. You do not want to keep drinking, because you have seen now that your livers are in bad shape. Family is falling apart. You got in accident so many times, and you just hardly escaped. Fatal. Conditions. I don't know what to do with myself. Let's go in some intensive treatment and AA meetings and all that. There is somewhere this Bhagini is not really helping you. Sister is not helping you. Bhagini. Or this is a misguided phenomena by your Bhagini. Your own, either it's lack of your sankalpa, power of will and determination, or it's sloth, inertia, bad company, or whatever, has created a situation where you have no longer trust in yourself or trust in the family, or something else has caused, and whereby somehow you have lost your ability to do what you desire to do. You have lost your ability to undo what has already been done. You have lost your ability to refrain from doing what you do not wish to do. And thus the problems are being created. You go to the toilet and you are sitting there for the last 20, 30 minutes, nothing is coming out. Okay, what should I do? Make an appointment with Dr. Kerry Demers. Said, oh yes, you have big trouble, big problem. Take some Triphala. There is something in Triphala that has come from or that has been blessed by Bhagini. That's why you take Triphala and next day morning you have nice bowel movement. Here is problem, here is cure. But the problem is a little more serious. There are so many things in life which you want to do but you are not able to do. Problem is caused by that too. Tension, that's where stress comes from. You are working, doing, and then you create stress on yourself. And so many problems are caused by whether it's hypertension or blood pressure or whatever. It comes from your ability, your lack of ability to do what you wish to do. And yet you are continuously trying to do, and you end up with stress and tension. And then there comes a long series of problems. Similarly, dharmasi yashasasriya, you want to be a great holy man, but you have your own set of problems. You want to be hailed as greatest soul on the planet, and yet your Hindu stuff, your Christian stuff, your Muslim stuff is killing you. You are not able to come out of that box, and thus, like a tiny little, you know, lab rat, you are just going from here to yeah, start from, you know, from this Hindu point of view, and run all the way to temple, come back like a little rat, and yet you want to be the owner of the entire total kingdom of heaven. Either you be happy that you have already gotten your place in Hindu heaven, Hindu kingdom, you know, and be happy with that. But somehow you desire to find a greater freedom, you know, the freedom that allows you to have access to much bigger kingdom of heaven. Then better get out of that box called Hinduism or Christianity or Islam or Judaism. You know? Because it is the box that is constantly, you know, holding you there. Bhagini will allow you to do that. And that is how you find a cure for a greater disease. Today, when you have a completely messy life, you start with Hindu medicine. There comes a time when that particular problem is cured. Now you need a different kind of, different dose medicine to overcome much bigger problem in order to achieve much bigger freedom. You know, this is called continuous growth. A sick religion will make you sick. A healthy religion will make you healthy. Healthy food will make you healthy. Unhealthy food will make you unhealthy. Healthy air will make you healthy. Unhealthy air will make you unhealthy. No. Healthy thought will make you healthy. Unhealthy thought will make you unhealthy. It is so simple. No. And this is what this bhagini is all about. Where our problems are caused by unhealthy thoughts, unhealthy philosophy, unhealthy religion, unhealthy understanding, and wherever our power of will, power of determination, power of intelligence has been damaged, has been sickened by our unhealthy lifestyle, by our unhealthy thought, speech, and action, where our thought process is somewhat so distorted that our, you know, our ability to do something and our ability to refrain from doing something has been damaged, and thus life has become chaotic. You know? That is where this particular type of practice, you know, comes forward with its healing force, healing energy, and force of renewal, you know, and nurturance. A sick religion will make you sick. A healthy religion will make you healthy. Healthy food will make you healthy. Unhealthy food will make you unhealthy. Healthy air will make you healthy. Unhealthy air will make you unhealthy. No. Healthy thought will make you healthy. Unhealthy thought will make you unhealthy. It is so simple. No. And this is what this bhagini is all about. Where our problems are caused by unhealthy thoughts, unhealthy philosophy, unhealthy religion, unhealthy understanding, and wherever our power of will, power of determination, power of intelligence has been damaged, has been sickened by our unhealthy lifestyle, by our unhealthy thought, speech, and action, where our thought process is somewhat so distorted that our, you know, our ability to do something and our ability to refrain from doing something has been damaged, and thus life has become chaotic. That is where this particular type of practice, you know, comes forward with its healing force, healing energy, and the force of renewal, you know, and nurturance. From the negative angle, the forces which damage our divine nature, which damage or which pollute the sacred within us, such forces are also called bhaginis, or let's say their lack of cooperation damages the sacred within us, takes away that sacredness from our own thought, speech, and action, from our own body, breath, mind, and senses, takes away the sacredness from our, you know, from our relationship, from our behavior, from our, in our, from our society, from our culture, from our religion, you know. And therefore, one day we become Sikh individuals, Sikh families, Sikh societies, Sikh religions, Sikh nations, you know, Sikh communities. You know? And therefore, this particular practice is cure for that kind of sickness. Then much bigger are Brahmi Adistu Rudra Matarah, Rudra Mata. You know? Much, 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 much more higher level of force. That is the force of our breath, the force of our mind, you know, manifesting in eight forms, which is, again, it's a complete, again, huge science, which couple of weeks ago, as we went through Brahmi Kaumari, that is right in the second, this phenomena, this concept is in the second round of the first chakra of the Sri Chakra, Sri Yantra. That is, you know, Brahmi, Anima, Laghima, first one, first round, second round is Brahmi, Kaumari, etc. So the much, much, much bigger circuits of the Divine Mother. So it's like, first one is referring to Bhagini, the sister. Now comes Mata, the mother. You know, Mata means mother. Whose mother? Mother of Rudra, mother of God, mother of Shiva. No. Meaning that which is very, very, very origin of our existence. That which allows us to grow. That which is the very principle of so-called mother. And mother means source of origin, nurturance, both. Davi cha evam vidha geya guptachara archane rata. There are certain forces, they become very active when you are being secretive. Certain things, there are times when people do things in a very secret manner. You know? A very, very powerful idea came into your mind. Immediately you pick up your telephone, call your lawyer, you know, for trademark. Keep it absolutely quiet until this process is done. Otherwise, somebody else might grab it. Or its initiation, its mantra is given to you during the time of initiation. It's absolutely secret and personal. But look at the nature of the secrecy. You got the idea. It's a very, very powerful idea with great commercial potential. That is bioplastic idea. A plastic company, you know, petrochemical company, is now is trying to figure out how to get into a new market too, how to shine its image, or how to explore one more dimension for its market. Boom! Secret. Other one, keep it secret. One is keeping secret so that it does not get into someone else's hands or it does not fall in public domain, otherwise keeping secret so that it becomes an integral, inseparable wealth of my soul, part of my heart. And somewhere where I do not need recognition from the whole world that I am such a great soul, I practice this mantra, I am a student of such and such teacher, I am so here you are trying to keep it secret so that you do not fall in the trap of recognition. There you are keeping secret so that you are the only one to be recognized. No. One leads you toward non-possessiveness and all that thing that evolves, all the great wealth that comes from non-possessiveness, and there you are keeping secret so that it becomes your private possession and you reap the fruits of everything that comes from possessiveness, being possessive. No? And there's very unique energy behind these two kinds of secrets. And that energy is called Dabhi. No. It is Gupta Char Archane Rata. It is that force that is that functions in your secret missions. Spirituality is secret mission. No. Functions, many of the projects of CIA are also secret, belongs to secret mission. No. A particular nation figures out a system of assassinating the president of a particular nation, country, that is secret. You know, that's where the energy of secrecy is that what, you know, ensures that this assassination will be successful. And then here is a spiritual practice that requires same amount of secrecy or perhaps even more in order to attain spiritual enlightenment. And the result of that spiritual enlightenment is complete antidote to that secret force which allows one to succeed in assassination of somebody else. One gives death, another gives immortality. You know? Another one form of secrecy, you know, gives death. Another form of secrecy or secret force gives life. And Guptachar Rate Macha. So this force, this particular force is called Dabhi. This particular force, to use this force, no, in a destructive manner and thereby end up with a destructive result and suffer from the misery caused by that destructive, you know, work is one phenomena, and other one is to use the same very force to counteract, neutralize the impact of a destructive act and thus overcome suffering is also the function of Dabhi, and it is this particular practice refers to that. In our personal life, so much misery comes to us just because of our secretive behaviors. No? We become sneaky. No? Many of organizations become sneaky. Nations become sneaky. Certain departments in our government become sneaky. And the result is something undesirable. Depending on the scale of our secretiveness and sneakiness, The results are also either big or small. Suffering is either big scale suffering or small scale suffering. Now here comes this particular practice that focuses on overcoming suffering caused by this, you know, unfriendly, misbehaved, blindfolded Dabi forces. And you can just look back that how useful this practice could be in our own, for our own personal freedom, you know, and liberation, for the freedom and liberation at a much grander level, for our family, for our society, for our community, for the entire world today. Swadayantu, swadayanti, natu ghananti, chidra nivishana tatpara. What are these secretive forces? Dabis, what are they constantly, you know, involved in? Amazing. Chidra nivishana tatpara. They are constantly, actively busy in finding flaw in others. Where is the weak point in you? Where is the weak point? Where is the weakness and how that weakness can be exploited? What is the bottom line of a successful secret mission? Finding the weak points in that society, community, nation, or particular political leader, or particular, you know, company, which can be exploited. Though to find the flaw, chidra, chidra nveshan tatparaha. Damariyastu aparageya. Mantra tadgat chetasah. Paramritam samasnanti manusam vahayanti cha parayanti parayatanti akhilam prithivim rupam kurvanti anekadhaha. Damari is one more step. That ability of the Dabi, the ability of the secret organization, secret agency, that which has ability to change and adapt to the new climates, atmospheres and terrains, change the face, change the whole shape, change the whole color, you know, and not to hesitate at all in when it comes to succeed. Those, the forces which know nothing about ethics, morality, and spiritual philosophy to support a human action. Such forces are called Damari, the next one after Dabi. And how much problem do we create for ourselves and for the rest of the society and the whole planet by being that way? When we one-pointedly go after or accomplishing our goal, where ethics, morality, philosophy, spirituality, you know, lovefulness, everything is left behind. Justice, honesty, truth, who cares? Who cares? That, you know, being driven by that kind of force is called action of Damari. Where do we reach? We reach a point, it's called self-destruction, which begins first with killing our conscience, and feeling guilty about it, resulting into self-condemnation, and finally damaging our own power of discrimination and power of memory and retentive power, and we gradually, slowly, we start walking backward toward becoming an animal, and finally one day we become vegetables. backward walking of human race. Before we lose our humanness, we suffer a lot. Reversing this trend is called, reversing this trend is what is here in this particular practice that we are discussing this weekend. Now, of course, the levels are always different. First, we apply it unto ourselves. How not to do something, which is not approved by our own inner conscience? That is a great achievement. To be able to do which your own inner intelligence tells you that this is the right thing to do, and you got the reward right away. Who could grant you the satisfaction by respecting you other than you can do? There is the satisfaction you get from your own, heart, that respects you. That satisfaction cannot be compared with anybody, cannot be compared with anything. That's what you get. That's what charges you with that great deal of joy and happiness, that regardless how little people know about me and what I am and who I am, but my soul, my heart knows the divine that resides in me, recognizes, whether or not I am a right person. And that's plenty. Anything else that comes after that is like extra bonus. That's perfectly all right. And in that case, what will happen? No matter, even if you are misunderstood by others, still you don't care, you will take it as a reward. That will fit to your own vairagya, non-attachment. When you have found respect from within, when you realize that when you realize that you are doing something which your own heart, your own soul honors so much, then any kind of negative comments and negative, remarks that you get from outside world, it doesn't hurt you, but rather even it helps you strengthen your own vairagya, non-attachment and dispassion. That's a great thing too. Okay. And then it goes on, hinsika, rupika. The tendency of violence is called rupika. Akasmik, and then comes apasmar. Akasmik patanaihi, akasmik patan nahi sangye, phed modakadi kridaspa apasmaraha. The literal translation of this word apasmara is epilepsy. Yeah, epilepsy is the literal translation of this word, apasmara. How does it define? Akasmik patan, you suddenly fall. You lose consciousness. Phena, foaming, from mouth. Mukadi, you become tense. That which does all these things is called apasmara, epilepsy. But it has a very unique connotation. These are all physical symptoms that you are noticing. definitely this is, it has gone all the way to the level of your body. Then you look into the so-called physical causes into your nervous system, brain, you know, whether the blood did not reach enough, there wasn't enough blood supply to the brain, therefore it happened. You know, there's so many things, you know, are there which medical science will say. However, apasmara, when you become hysterical about things, smara, krito smara kritam smara, it's a beautiful phrase comes in Isha Upanishad. I think it is the last mantra, last verse of Isha Upanishad. Remember, something related to remembering. Apas, when we are removed from the process of memory, when there is disconnect between the center of memory, the flow of memory, and that which is to be regulated due to the the power of memory. When there is a disconnect between the two, there are problems caused by that disconnect. Our muscles have, there is memory, the muscle memory. There is memory of everything that we do. It gets deposited in the form of memory. Later on, And it is because of that we function. That's how the training is exactly, you know, depositing a skill, an idea into our memory field so that later on it can be recollected properly, and at its maturity stage it becomes spontaneous and automatic. That's called training. You train your muscles to run, jog, lift weight. You know? Similarly, you train by every day watching certain kind of movies, certain kind of shows. Your brain gets trained to it, and your brain asks for that. There is nothing like pleasant or unpleasant. You watch, you know, these violent, you know, shows or games, you play violent games, and then thereafter automatically smara, no, of, you know, your violent games, and thus that contributes to the development of your personality, tastes and interests. Your preferences are influenced by what is there in the form of your, what is there, what has been deposited in your memory field. Similar, by following the law of similar attract similar, our mind goes for that. You know, this is what the studies, these people, these scriptures, these masters have done, that you start giving, you start presenting, a child is involved in more and more into violent game, and for that child, joy comes from being violent. Joy comes by, from violence. There is a great joy, great pleasure involved in pain. Therefore, you take away the painful situations and circumstances from the life of those who have become used and accustomed to it. It is painful. It is painful not to have that painful situation and circumstance. Normally what happens, we constantly watch, see, think, and talk about violence, pain, hurt, misery, accident, tone, you know. So there comes a joy from relating to the same thing again and again and again. Now, when somehow this phenomena is taken away abruptly, When there is disconnect between that memory and the responses, your anatomical responses, responses of your body and senses, that's called apasmara. You become hysterical. You go wild. You know. I was suffering from this hysteria just a month ago, 2 months ago. Why? For somewhere starting from September, October or so last year, I did not get chance to read, write and teach. In my lifestyle, I'm a teacher. I teach, I write. By the time our Kumbh Mela was finished, when I came here, I was just literally, it's like I felt so empty, so useless. To me, life was just totally meaningless, and I was dying. Like there was hunger. There was such great hunger, right, to write. It's so strong that many things I wrote, it's like I just, in one day time, just like, you know, one article here, another writing there, and whole cutoff minister there, you know, the amount of writing I did, and even I was dying to teach. And in order to fulfill my that, you know, in order to cure my that so-called positive spiritual disease, you know, I had to teach, and then I started teaching every evening. No, I'm just giving you example. Ask residents what was happening to me. For 6 months, I was suffering from this apasmara. Only thing is that I did not have time to really see that what a disconnect was there. Such a great deal of disconnect between my that smara, you know, being a teacher, writer, thinker, you know. It's like the pandit in me had been totally disconnected from the totality of my life, and there was something happening. There was a turmoil. Although it wasn't that I was going wild or anything, but it's like the hunger was there. Hunger to read, hunger to write, hunger to teach. No? And I started doing it. And therefore, what I did in those days, in last month or so, after I came back from India, I did lots of writing, lots of teaching. And even it's like it was so forceful that I have created some DVDs. I just came here, perfect and precise, you know, way of doing things. Like this will be 45 minute long session, 55 minute long session. Mind so clear, so straight, so steady. You know, I kept producing, I kept teaching. When a condition is caused by this kind of phenomena, that's called apasmara. It could be bad, it could be good. No. You take away, no. And there are examples, beautiful examples. A great, great soul, his name is Ajamil. In the scriptures, Srimad Bhagavatam. His whole life was taken away, was disconnected from his real self. That was the memory, that, you know, whatever was stored about, you know, in his memory field, he was totally disconnected from that. A great soul got involved into prostitution, drugs, alcohol, all kinds of things. Has many, many children in his old age. Lost everything. Insult, dishonor from everywhere coming to him. Then there came a reminder. And even he did not have time, energy, life, motivation left to do anything, to to help himself. So another sage comes, Narada. Child was born in old age. Told, you know what is his name? Let's give the naming ceremony. During the naming ceremony, gave the name Narayan. This old man is now in his deathbed. Now comes the memory of Narayan. Narayan, can you give me a bit of water, little bit? Narayan, where are you? Narayan's mummy, do you know where is, what is Narayan doing? He might don't, make sure he doesn't get in trouble. Narayan, suddenly everything flashed. So he was, it's no, see, sometimes when people take drugs, especially certain kind of drugs, for example, let's say marijuana, it's such, things begin to flow too fast from the field of, you know, memory. Things come and person starts seeing something which is not normally seen through the naked eyes. And great, right after comes disconnect. The experience that is during the disconnect, you know, hangover time, when again the body is, you know, crying to get back to its previous experience, that's called apasmara. And it is a state of turmoil. And when intensity of turmoil is no longer under control and goes, you know, out of control, that is called apasmara. The source of something you want to do and somehow it's in your memory, but disconnect. There is such a big disconnect. That apasmara, the smara has been removed. Apas, you know, apakritam has been removed. So that's why getting back to one's own smriti, that is why if you read Yoga Sutra, the strengthening one's memory and tapping into one's own memory field is one of the most important factors in sadhana. But in a controlled manner, positive manner, you know, thoughtful manner, otherwise you end up into just hodgepodge of your memory, where all the good, bad, right, wrong are so mixed, so confused, that you get more confused. It's not that way, but rather in a very systematic, methodical manner. And that particular force is called apasmara, you know, that which creates that hodgepodge, and that which removes the disconnect and again further connects you back to your own origin, your own source. That which, you know, reconnects. That is called the healing force. Because it is by reconnecting yourself with your own source, you begin to see the improvement. You know? And that's apasmara. And that very factor is in this particular mantra, in this particular practice that we are teaching. Smashanadi vasana ulka mukha pishachaha. Pishach means invisible, those which are not visible to your eyes and yet chew, eat raw flesh, that which eat your flesh. No. The any causes of debilitating diseases, wasting diseases, are put in one category in the scriptures called Pishacha. That is still on the top in the middle there. Pishacha. No? Pishitam. No? No? Pishit means, you know, meat, raw flesh. So there are lots of. So whether it's your own body eating itself, whether it's one of your own gastric juices, whether it's virus or whatever. No? And called Pishach, and cure for that. Brahma Rakshans, Rakshansi Rakshas Pishesa. ओके ब्रह्म राक्षस अपमृत्यु ब्रह्म राक्षस देयर इज ए डिजीज दैट वी इनवाइट अपॉन आवर सेल्व्स बाय नॉट शेयरिंग व्हिच वी मस्ट शेयर विथ अदर्स नो देयर इज सर्टेन ओब्लिगेशन दैट ऑल ऑफ अस वी हैव फेलियर टू टेक केयर ऑफ दैट ओब्लिगेशन कॉजेस ए सिकनेस It is example, it's not the only factor, but example is given. A teacher who studies and never teaches and dies without passing on that knowledge to somebody, that such a teacher, such a learned person is born as Brahmarakshas. Unembodied soul which suffers from this, dissatisfaction of not being able to pass on his knowledge, and thus who somehow through his negligence blocked his own continuity. A teacher lives in the form of his student. Just as instinctively all creatures want to procreate and pass on, or let's say preserve themselves in the form of their genetic extensions. Similarly, knowledge also has its own, will to, survive. And somehow you did not allow yourself to continue living in the form of your own students. At some point your conscience will come and beat you up, and therefore you live with that kind of pain that, my God, why didn't I teach? There's so many people out there, they could have benefited, I could have. And what did I give to my teachers? You think that you go to a college, and you paid your fee, and therefore it's done. That is totally, you are putting a price tag on knowledge, which is very inappropriate to begin with. No? Okay, you pay fee to your Harvard or University of Pennsylvania, fine. But what kind of, what kind of love offering are you making to, let's say, Newton, Albert Einstein, or Subhas, or let's say Jagdish Chandra Bose, or Swami Rama, or Shankaracharya, or let's say Dante? By the time you come to college, your general knowledge includes the knowledge of so many other great souls of the past. Many of them died hundreds of years ago. Many of them, we don't know who they are. And even whether it's Dante or whether it's Albert Einstein or Isaac Newton, they too had inherited a great deal of knowledge from their past. And it was just like the wick was there, oil was there, the lamp was perfectly ready. Somehow it happened that a matchstick happened to fall in the hands of, Albert Einstein, and he got this knowledge. So there is huge force of knowledge, great lineage, great stream of knowledge flowing all the way to us. Our inability to share that which ought to be shared, is also source of our sickness somewhere at some level. That is called Brahmarakshas. So there is something which, similarly, you do something to your ancestors. They are gone, they are dead. If you do not, if you do not put a bouquet of flower, if you do not offer a bouquet of flower to your ancestors, they are not really going to really suffer. God knows who they are, where they are, whether they are still somewhere in the graveyard or whether they are in the heaven. It's so self-conflicting that you offer a bouquet of flower at somebody's cemetery where you think, according to your belief, let's say if it's Judeo-Christian belief, that fellow is somewhere waiting for the, day of judgment. What difference it makes whether you offer or do not offer him, whether you visit that, cemetery or not. You do these things for yourself. for your own personal growth and development, so that you don't get sick on account of your own, you know, the all that achievement, your, you know, not being able to share the fruits of your achievements causes its own unique kind of constipation, you know. And cure for that constipation and the disease caused by that is in this practice. Then apamrityu, untimely death. Amazing thing. On one hand, law of karma says that everyone's birth and death is predetermined, and yet there is apamrityu, untimely death. There is no untimely death to anybody else but to humans. Humans can extend their life a little bit through their good effort. They can shorten their life through their bad effort. You can live unhealthy life, you can live relatively good healthy life. So there are, let's say, due to your carelessness, due to your uncontrolled anger, which you deliberately feed and do not cure on time, you can kill yourself untimely. What is the result of untimely death? Hang around this planet without having a body. Just as you are in bad mood, but how long that bad mood lasts? For a couple of hours. You get in fight with somebody, no? If you are a knowledgeable person, it will last just for a few seconds. You are in bad mood just for a few seconds, for a few minutes. If you are not very well controlled person, and if you don't have good amount of self-mastery, then it will last for a couple of hours. Or it may last for a couple of days. And if you are really a wreck, it might last for whole life. No? Then you start, you know, telling yourself, you know, it is my right to avenge this fellow. Then you go on, you know, in the name of, you know, justice, in the name of right, you may go on, you know, feeding this revenge. And it becomes such an integral part of your personality that it goes into your genes. And you pass on that kind of tendency to your children, great-grandchildren. Society continues to live that way. This is called revenge. For example, action committed under the influence of revenge is called apamrityu, untimely death. No. Result is untimely death. You killed yourself a little bit. Untimely death is not just committing suicide or getting into accident. When you do not stop killing yourself, that's called untimely death. Holding on to anger, hatred, jealousy is called untimely death. You know, participating into untimely death. And amazing thing is, when it's really, really, really strong, you know, people think that, you know, genetic laws are fully established, wrong. You know, it's wrong. Mind over matter is established law. You know, it's established law. And therefore, even if you do not see a super, super, super fantastic achievement from your spiritual practices, don't worry. It's law of the universe, law of nature, that every action must bear fruit. And suppose you started your spiritual practice, despite the fact you never got married, despite the fact you never had children, despite the fact you started your practice after your childbearing age was, you know, completed. Therefore, there is nothing that you can pass on to next generation. Don't think that way. You are alive, you are breathing, and your breath is becoming part of this, our atmosphere, you know, Earth's atmosphere. And the The subtle samskaras of your practice is getting, becoming part of this atmosphere. And people living in that atmosphere or people waiting to be born in that particular atmosphere will benefit from your practice. And you definitely are benefiting from your practice. Next time, Prakriti will make sure, nature will make sure that all the molecules that are charged with the, your own personal practice are drawn to you, and those particular molecules are used in the formation or are utilized in the formation of your own body. Law of nature is so beautiful, so perfect, that nothing can change that law. Therefore, it's the vibration of your this lifetime's practices will charge that particular leaf of your broccoli which you are bound to eat, and thus you get back your spiritual energy, and that is how you will start your practice exactly where you have left in your previous lifetime. The samskaras of your practice is not only just in your mind, samskaras of your practice pervade every nook and cranny of the universe. The rays of the sun, the light, water, air, and that is called law of immortality. No. Inexhaustible, indestructible nature of your thought, speech, and action that continues to live, that's called immortality. Your practice is immortal. The fruits of your practice is immortal, and indestructible. And it comes back to you. Even, remember, Casper? That little ghost? How he walks? That bundle? That luggage? Casper? Our bhuta, the sunya, that empty, our bhuta, our spirit, our soul, our consciousness carries its samskaras. And what is our consciousness and spirit? We are into our waters, air, everything, sky, stars, and thus, it will go into broccoli, spinach, cows, grass, comes back to again to the same very source where it started. And thus one day you will end up somewhere accidentally, incidentally, or somehow logically proven manner, you will end up getting your mala beads somewhere again, You will end up attending a seminar on Netra Tantra. Whoever, just you go in your remotest imagination, did you ever think that one day you will study a book called Netra Tantra from a Panditji from India, who himself had hard time imagining that he himself will end up in America, And thus, but still we are here, This kind of seminar, this kind of subject, I went to Banaras. By the time I was, big enough to really study this subject, Pandit Gopinath Kaviraj has become old. By the time I was able to really, I had enough resources to go to and study with Lakshmana Ju in Kashmir. I had enough resources to go to Banaras and seek and find somebody. I landed here. But somehow I studied. Certain things I wanted to study, and I knew that I was perfectly ready to study, but somehow I couldn't. I ended up studying those things with people at the University of Pennsylvania. How? This is how? The immortality of our soul, immortality of our practices, immortality of our fruits of our practices continues to propagate itself. And whenever it's the right time, right place, it comes back to us And thus, this phrase that our karma comes back to us is a very fair statement. Karma will catch you. Your karma will catch you, boy. No? See, your karma is hiding in the soil, in the air, in the spinach, in the cabbage, in the, you know, broccoli, in the grains of wheat and barley, you know. And that is guiding us, and thus it's there, you know. Not, you know, being negligent to that particular force of continuity, that particular force of immortality, and willfully damaging that immortality is called untimely death. Time is a complete factor in itself. The time that is allotted to you cannot be allotted to somebody else, because that is you, for you. So those next remaining 20 years, 30 years, you cannot find a body, even if it is body of a slug or a pig. That particular time for you was as human. And there is very long waiting list, very, very long waiting list to find a human body again. It's gone. That's why committing suicide is one of the worst, quote, sins. Because it's a big loss. What a big loss. You know, very big loss. Because it has, and the pain caused by this loss is very torturesome. And there are practices pertaining to this particular scripture and mantra which you can do to help such people. You can do to help yourself so that you somehow don't become so mindless that you hurt yourself. The practice that which enables you not to hurt yourself, enables you to not to hurt others, and empowers you to heal those who have already hurt themselves so badly. That practice is called Mahamrityunjay Mantra.